Something else I wanted to talk about, actually. Yeah, I mean, when I mentioned projects, I forgot to mention S900.net and S900.tv. And it's interesting because the real reason I set those up as video sites was partly because I was intrigued. I felt like video was becoming the new audio. You know, we're finally approaching points where we have standardized audio, we have standardized formats, and we have, you know, standardized pieces of software for dealing with video. And I feel we're at that point that we were in 99 where audio became standardized. You had MP3s, you had WAV files, you had, you know, you had Ableton just beginning, and you had you had the general sense that there were tools that everybody had access to with piracy, and we were all exploring this new playground. And video wasn't really like that. I mean, I've experimented with video before, and video was like, you never knew what format to use. There was no standardization. There was no Napster for video. You had YouTube, but YouTube wasn't really the same thing. I mean, it was sort of. I mean, YouTube was kind of the mp3.com or whatever, but there was this sense that video had remained a business format. And, you know, MP3 had become democratized. You know, I mean, we'd had these communities of people like ourselves who were doing things with MP3. And really, you know, democratizing the whole thing. Anyway, so yeah, there was a sense in which the video thing was a move on my part to think, you know, this is the new frontier. Maybe that's naive. Anyway, but the other thing, which I should mention, which is really what I wanted to talk about, was that I wanted to use it. I noticed that a lot of people who were members of S900 were doing video, and I just thought it was a way to refresh the sites. And, you know, I felt very bad about S900 for a long time because, you know, that was, at one point, it was a floating community. You know, I love that rhyme you did on my beat where you talked about looking for a floating community, because that's, you know, that's so much what the internet has been for me in terms of music. It's been this community of like-minded people who all have that sense that they were doing, that they were expressing themselves, and the community fed to that, you know. And I know for me, when I set up S900, my feeling was, you know, if I want to make a go of having a proper record career, I've got to go to London. Or in your case, that would be New York or LA or whatever. You know, those center towns where you get the record deal, you get the movie deal, whatever it is, you know. You have to go to those towns in order to exist. And to me, something that S900 represented, and God Auxiliary and you know, Metempsychosis and all of those things, they were places where, you know, I suppose it's called outsider art now, but there's a sense of, like, these people who had art but didn't have the sort of resources to divorce themselves from their community, or even the desire to divorce themselves to their community in order to gain a career, you know, just wanting to do art where they were and get it to people. And it's something that really has faded for me, at least. I know Godzilla has rejuvenated it, but it's like, and it reminds me of something else. In the early 90s, I was down in London and I was going to Spiral Tribe raves, and, you know, Spiral Tribe were famous because before I even started going down there, they had an illegal rave where 250,000 people turned up. And that pretty much freaked out the government in a big way. And you know, there was this And people don't realize this, that the rave movement in Britain was like a civil war. You know, there was a revolutionary force of a bunch of young people gathering in huge numbers, numbers that the government really didn't want to have to deal with. And, you know, just breaking the law, you know, taking drugs, you know, using warehouses that were squatted rather than hired, you know, just setting up in farmers' fields. And it's not that the illegality was the best thing about it. The thing that I think, you know, because they could prosecute that. That wasn't an issue. They could arrest people for drugs. And frankly, I don't think the government really cares about a bunch of people doing drugs. That's not really what it was. A lot of people talk about it was like a psychic war of like they wanted to control our mind space. I don't think that's what it was. What it was you had 250,000 people turning up for one event. And what they didn't like about that was not what they were doing, but that there was a sense of community which wasn't defined by the state, a sense of community which people weren't paying for, a communication space that was not censored, you know, or licensed or, you know, permitted by the authorities. And one of the things that I really felt, And to me, it was a real reflection of the 60s. You know, I'd just come from college. I'd been reading the Beats. You know, I'd read Hunter S. Thompson. And I had a real sense of what the 60s was. And I felt almost in a sense of having read all those books in that short time, particularly Burroughs and Ginsberg. And then, you know, finally, when just as I arrived in London, I read Fear and Loathing. And there was this real sense that what was going on was a reflection of the 60s. And sadly for me, you know, I saw a repeat of Fear and Loathing in that sense that they introduced the Criminal Justice Bill, which I don't know if that you're aware of that in America, but it had a clause in it which banned repetitive beats. And Gareth and I, a guy I know, Gareth, who did a lot of acid with me at the time, you know, it's like, we both said to each other, you know, that was an outlawing of a certain genre of music, which I think had never happened before. In the history of litigation, there's never been an outlawing of a specific genre. I mean, they basically made techno illegal. Now, it hasn't been heavily enforced since then, but there was that sense that they did that. They actually put a law through that did that. And it shut down the free party scene. And, you know, at the time, I'd done a lot too much acid. I had my first psychotic break. Gareth moved up to Glasgow to be with his girlfriend. Basically, there was this sense that, you know, after 5 years later, I'd recovered from the psychotic break. And, you know, I was trying to go straight and get my life together. And, you know, I had this realization when I started making music that they had succeeded. That what they had been afraid of was the community. And it got to a point where I was sitting in a room and everybody that I knew, with the exception of Gareth, at that time, was completely out of touch with me. I mean, we didn't know how to get in touch with each other. It had gone. They had defeated us. They had destroyed that community. And so then I felt when I started in 1999 to make music, and I was involved with Yes Mate and on the fringes of Metempsychosis, and then S900 came along. There was that sense of, right, that this is another community. This is the same thing happening again. There was this sense that now we're in touch, you know, now we're communicating. I'm not just surrounded by random people. I'm in a community that is like-minded, which I hadn't felt in the intervening time, and it had been 8 years, and there was this sense of, you know, we're back again, you know, now they have something to worry about. And they were worried about Napster, and they were worried about, you know, what came to be Pirate Bay, and, you know, the whole peer-to-peer thing. And now I'm back here now in 2012, and I'm looking at the situation, and I'm like, they've done it again. The community's gone. And I mean, God Auxiliary is certainly doing good work, but there's this sense that we're divided again. You know, it's we're all getting on with our lives, you know. And there's this sense that, you know, I mean, they got the hippies, you know. Everybody had to get a job and, you know, just move on and start regretting their acid haze and, you know, just getting sensible. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with sensible. But when sensible excludes that sense of community and vibrancy, which it often does, sadly, suddenly we're back in that situation where the man is in control. And I mean, I'm sure if I were camping on Wall Street right now, I wouldn't feel like that. I'd feel like it was back again. But I think that's the fear, and I think that's the thing. It's not that they fear what we do when we're together. They fear us being together. What I really want to do is do something that reminds people that there's more, you know, there's more. You don't have to do what you're prescribed, you know. It's not as bleak as it seems, because they will always try and convince us that it's bleak and that we need to get a job and we need to get that house because, you know, the credit crunch is coming. And I don't know, there's just a sense of hope and community are the two things that the systems of control dislike. Because when you're hopeful and you're in a community, you don't have to repair all your wounds with products. You don't have to, I mean, when you've got friends, you don't need a therapist. When when your friends are making art, you don't watch television. You know, when you know the people around you and trust them, you don't need to buy designer clothes to impress people. When you're in a relationship, you know, it's just that whole thing of like, when you're together, money doesn't have that hold, you know. Money is commonly a replacement for emotion and community and togetherness, you know. Because we don't need all this stuff. I'm looking at my room right now. I don't need all this stuff. I feel like I need all this stuff because, apart from talking into this mic, I haven't talked to anybody today. As I sense that we do need that community. And that's what they fear. And it's not because we'll rise up and destroy their power structures. It's just that we won't throw our lives away on cash. And let's face it, they're trying to monetize a population. That's what they're doing. Kind of rambling now, this is gonna be a big file, but there was this thing where they were talking about the economy, and there was an economist and the interviewer was saying, what would be the best thing to do in this climate? And he said the best thing would be to come out of the stock market and consolidate your funds and save. But he said, obviously we can't do that. And she said, why? And she said, that's bad for the economy. And she said, so what's good for the economy? And what's good for the economy is to buy more stuff than you need and to take out loans. And there's a sense of this dramatic disconnect of what's good for the group being extremely bad for the individual, and what's good for the individual being extremely bad for the group. And I think that is only if you identify your group as being the economy. I think if you're in a community of like-minded, caring people, what's good for the individual is good for the community, and what's good for the community is good for the individual. And I think that's the defined difference between the sort of communities we can have on the internet and, to take a word, Facebook. You know? Because call auxiliary, if people have been creative, it inspires other people, the whole thing goes well. But with Facebook, you've got to have that desperation. You've got to be sharing information about the last thing you bought, because that's what monetizes Facebook. They want to monetize your interconnections, and discover the routes to getting you to buy things. And it's fashionable to hate Facebook, but it's not just Facebook. It's the entire internet as it is now. You know? Anyway, enough of that. I'll talk to you soon.